You're listening to Health Lifelines, a podcast brought to you by The Lifeguard Approach, your trusted source for insights, solutions, and training that empower you to become a lifeguard for your patient's health and well-being. Hello, and welcome to the Health Lifelines podcast. I am so excited about today's guest because he is someone I'm deeply honored to introduce, and it's Dr. Kim Kutch. And not only am I excited about this because of his groundbreaking contributions to dentistry, but because he is also a friend, a mentor, and a trusted colleague for over two decades. He's a lifelong learner and leader, always asking better questions, always searching for a better way to care for patients. His work has elevated not just science and protocols, but our mindset as clinicians, reminding us that curiosity and compassion must go hand in hand. So I'm thrilled to share this conversation with you today because I know it will challenge and inspire you, just as Dr. Kutch has challenged and inspired me over the years. So Dr. Kim Kutch, welcome to the conversation.
Well, thank you, Chris, and thank you for that wonderful, warm welcome. I really admire and respect you, and we've been friends for, over 20 years, and so it's really a privilege for me to be here with you today and with your audience.
Well, thank you. I've got before we dive deep into this, I've got a couple questions that don't require a lot, but I would love to have you answer this to see so that the listeners get a little bit more insight into who you are. Tell me about what you consider your superpower.
My superpower, it's a blessing and a curse. And I feel like I see things that other people don't see. I ask questions that other people don't ask, and I look for answers to questions that people haven't asked yet. And I once commented to Rella Christensen that I felt like I was always felt like I've been like 20 years ahead of my time, right? Like everything that I came up with in dentistry that I asked questions about or wanted to see a change in progress, it was like 20 years later, people got it, right? And they didn't get it when I first, talked about it or introduced it. And so, and she said, Rella said to me, Kim, you've always been 20 years ahead. And that, I think, is my superpower. And I would say, Chris, it's also a frustrating curse, right? Because I would see things and go, why not? Why doesn't anybody else get this, right? It's so crystal clear to me. And I mean, for example, when we started talking about the medical management of dental caries and looking at risk assessment based care and trying to look at the whole person and dental caries as a disease rather than a cavity, and it became so clear to me. And yet I'd talk to dentists and they'd look like I was talking Greek. They just have this deer in the headlight look, and then they turn, shake their head and turn around and walk away. And now, of course, it's, it's mainstream topic, but, actually 25 years ago, people thought I was nuts. Anyway, so that's my superpower.
That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about that, about caries and whether or not other people have shifted from it just being thinking of it as a cavity caused by sugar or more about that it's a biofilm disease.
Yeah, Chris, that's a great topic for conversation. And, like when I said, when I first started on this kind of personal journey, what really triggered it for me was I'd been in private practice in a small town, Albany, Oregon, where I grew up. My parents were farmers, they knew everybody in the community. So most of my patients I had known my entire life. So these weren't just like patients, they were like friends and family, right? And they just kept getting cavities, and I kept doing what I was taught to do, and they were trying to do what I was helping instruct them to do, and yet in spite of all of they just kept getting cavities, and I was frustrated. And if you're in one place long enough, you start to see your own work fail, right? And I thought, this one morning I woke up and I was like, this doesn't work. Like, if this worked, they would stop getting cavities. And we're missing something here. And so I had sold one of my first companies that I built, and I had taken a 3-year sabbatical, and it gave me the opportunity to really reach out. It was just the infancy of the internet, gave me an opportunity to reach out to the world's leading minds in dental caries, and bless them. They all became, anybody I asked became a mentor for me. And Philip Marsh's groundbreaking research on biofilm and, pH in the mouth, how that, selected for the pathogens that, caused dental caries. And then we found out not only just them, but also their behavior of producing acid, opened a whole world to me, right? And so it was like I had the opportunity to study that, and John Featherstone, became a mentor to me, and Doug Young, and Doug and I spent a lot of time going through Philip Marsh's research, and then Doug spent a lot of time at EDEA, which is the Dental Educators Association, and really helped create caries risk assessment as a standard of practice in the dental schools. And this has been, like almost 20 years ago. So it slowly penetrated the mindset of the young dentists that we're training now, right? And so it was kind of, progressive. And one of the challenges that I ran into was in speaking with Philip Marsh, was that I proposed to him, like, I understood that having a lowered pH in the mouth helped contribute and kind of drive this disease, creating cavities. So I posed to him, well, what would happen if we raise the pH? If it's pH driven that direction, what if we tried to drive it back the other direction, back to health with pH? And he said, oh, yeah, that'll work. He goes, I actually did that in my biofilm models. And I go, why didn't you publish that, right? Because that was in the late 1980s. And he said, oh, I was just so excited about trying to figure out, sorting out what was driving it. And so Doug and I got together, and I was like, okay, so all we got to do is just go to Walmart, get a shopping cart. I still had a research laboratory. And I thought, let's just go there, let's buy all the products, and we'll pick the one that has the highest pH. I'll start treating my patients and my practice with it, and we'll see what happens. And I had no clue, Chris. I had absolutely no clue. I couldn't find a product that had a pH above 5.5, and a lot of them were from 3 to 4.3. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is like part of the problem, right? I mean, we're trying to elevate the pH and reverse this biofilm disorder, dysfunction, and we're doing it with acidic products. And so there's a reason for that, and I learned it l later. I mean, that's one of those curses of the superpower, is asking, like, well, why aren't they alkaline? And it's about shelf life stability. That's primarily it. Shelf life stability. So if it's acidic, nothing will grow in it. It'll be stable on the shelf for ages. If it's a pH of 8, it's alkaline, pH of 8 or 9, everything wants to grow in it. And all of our preservatives that we have are most active in an acidic environment, and so they really lose their potency in an alkaline environment. Took a team of engineers and I 4 years to figure out how to stabilize something at an elevated pH, for shelf life stability. But so I looked at Doug and I go, we're gonna have to do this ourselves. Like, I didn't really want to start another company, but it's like, nobody's gonna do this. It's on us. So that's when we started Carefree. I mean, 25 years ago, and started doing the research. Anyway, so that's kind of a quick background of that whole story. But in the last 25 years, we've seen continuous growth in the awareness and the changes in behaviors in dental practitioners, the professionals, dentists, hygienists, and assistants, everybody kind of understanding that if you just keep drilling and filling the cavities, you're just going to keep doing that because it doesn't treat the cause of the disease. And I think we're at a point, in our awareness in healthcare overall that we're starting to look at. Let's back up a step to treat the cause of whatever the disease is. Let's go for the cause, and rather than just keep treating symptoms and having this disease become chronic and progressive. So anyway, I think it's changed a lot. There's still a lot of work to do, but I'm pretty happy with how far we've come.
Oh, you've come so far. I know that for me, when I started work with Dr. McKay, he had, it's not what he said, but what I heard. You know the difference. And I heard him say, I want you to start painting a much larger canvas of who you can be for our patients. And he said, I'll give you continuing education, the technology that you need in a personal coach. And that set me off onto figuring out how to help patients create biofilm health. And that's when I found out about CareFree because my niece was working for you.
Oh, that's right. Yes, she was.
Yeah. And so she came into the office one day and wanted to talk to Brian, and he wasn't there. So I talked to her, and your philosophy of care and what you were doing really spurred me on to put that as my number one priority in trying to create health for patients, was to help them create biofilm health. And so I used your products. It's more a system to me than
Yeah,
a
it is. Yeah.
product. But that became the mainstay, and it was so easy because we just incorporated it into this is how we take care of you here. It wasn't a, well, if you want me to do something that's new and innovative that can really help you, but here's the cost of it, chairside, nah.
Yeah.
That didn't work for me because it became right then as a conversation about cost rather than a conversation about outcome. And so we just made it part of our routine. This is how we take care of you here. And I did a carry-free swab on every single patient at every visit. And that was important because that was gave me a glimpse. A very quick, wonderful glimpse of the health of the biofilm and what needed to shift in the patient so that they could create their own health.
And I think that, and Chris, bless you for that. I mean, the patients that, I mean, it's as simple as this. If you have a healthy biofilm in your mouth, you won't get cavities. I mean, it's just as simple as that. And if you can maintain that healthy biofilm, and we know what the risk factors are that contribute to those issues of dishealth. If you can maintain that healthy biofilm, like you're going to stay healthy. And now we know, Chris, I mean, following this up, now we know how big of an impact, if you have an unhealthy biofilm in the mouth, how big an impact that has on the rest of the body, like in terms of arterial disease, inflammation, and I just, strokes. Heart attacks and strokes. I mean, I start looking at that, and it's, I've always had that sense that you can't have a healthy body if you don't have a healthy mouth. I mean, it's the gateway to the body, and I think for a lot of years, unfortunately, in the United States, dentistry got disconnected from medicine in the medical schools. Oh, early on in the 1800s, and we saw dentistry saw itself as like we just take care of this. Right? And this is not connected to the rest of the body. And medicine has that same attitude, right? I mean, early on when we first started understanding that periodontal pathogens were playing a role in peripheral inflammatory disease and heart attacks and strokes, I was looking at some of the early research. Again, that was like 25 years ago. And I'm looking at it going like, this should be setting off alarms. Like it wasn't one study. It was like within 3 or 4 years, there was multiple studies that all indicated the same thing. And I went to my local hospital, and they have a once a month lunch and learn for the physicians. And I said, I'd like to get on your lunch and learn. I'd like to do a presentation for an hour on, the patients they're treating and gum disease and how it's impacting their patients, in terms of their overall health. And I never got on. And they looked at me and said, "You're a dentist. What could you possibly teach us about anything?" I mean, they had that attitude, and I was just like, "Really? That's your attitude? Because we're treating the same patients here, and I'm seeing you. I could help you, improve their health if you just understood what it is that I'm trying to do." And so that's changed over time. I think in the last 25 years, I think that certainly with people at the American Academy of Oral Systemic Health, Doug Thompson, Susan Maples, Michelle Hudson, they've all helped drive that awareness and start to make connections with the medical profession so that they see us as partners in taking care of the same people, the patients. Like, well, how does that impact them? And so, we're seeing great, I mean, we're seeing great change in our lifetime, Chris, that 25 years ago, I anticipated it to happen a lot faster. And then I got to a point, never going to see this in my lifetime. And now it's kind of happening. So that makes me feel really happy.
That is awesome. I know it's such great work you've been doing. Can you tell me, why aren't all dental professionals paying attention to all this, especially now what we know about systemic health? I think you're a lot like me in that I gave up on traditional hygiene because the questions that I was asking, traditional hygiene didn't even measure up. You couldn't use tradition to answer those questions. And I had lost my impact and influence with patients because what I was asking them to do and telling them to do wasn't working. So they were still coming back with, infection in their gums and bleeding and developing cavities. So what has to happen, do you think, for that shift to take place in
I tell
others?
you, Chris, as I think about that, because that's really a great question, right? And I sit here when you first start talking, I thought, if only I knew the answer to that question, right? Like, what's the roadblock here? And I think the main issue is that in healthcare in the United States, we're still disease driven. And we need to become health driven. And Bob Barkley pointed this out in the early 1970s. And for your audience who doesn't know, he was a very innovative, pioneering dentist who died early, but he really had a whole health kind of approach in the early 1970s that was, they thought, either loved him or you thought he was a quack, right? But one of the things that Bob Barkley was concerned about was that with the advent of dental insurance, and it's not really insurance, but with the advent of dental insurance, he felt we would become more and more treatment oriented to like the surgical approach, drill and fill, scraping teeth, because we could prove that we did that. And we would, instead of teaching patients prevention, which we wouldn't get paid for, teaching them nutrition, teaching them how to, and at this point, how to create and maintain a healthy biofilm, using our care skill and knowledge to help the patient create health. He was concerned that it would just continue to drive it to just treating symptoms of disease. And I have to tell you, I mean, that, what is that, like 55 years ago? He hit the nail on the head. I mean, he was a visionary and he saw this happening. And this is exactly where I think we still are today. We're still like focused on a patient comes in and we're focused on how many cavities do you have? How am I going to fix that? Rather than the most important question is we just step back and go, why do you have cavities? Because if I can find the answer to that question correctly, I can help you stop getting cavities, right? And so we need to step back and take the approach to look at that. But an entire healthcare system is disease driven. The pharmaceutical industry, 70% of all Americans across all age demographics from 6 months on, 70% take at least one prescription medication per day. 50% take two or more, and 20% take five or more. I mean, you know that. You saw that in your patients, right? And so we're very symptom disease based and looking at things like treating them, and they become chronic diseases. Like take type 2 diabetes, right? Health and exercise would go a long way to help, and diet would go a long way to helping people get healthy and not have to take any medications, but we don't approach it that way. It's like we've got a new wonder drug. Here, take this, and it's going to lower your A1C. I mean, you see, we're the only country in the world where pharmaceutical companies can advertise on television, right?
Yes.
And so it's like we think, what pill can I take rather than how should I modify my diet and maybe exercise? How can I do treat the cause of this in my personal life, and for and individualized care, how can I do that and create that? Instead, it's like, which medication should I be giving this patient? And to lower the A1C, and we just leave the cause in place. And so then they're, we become, they become statistics of the pharmaceutical industry. And I think one thing that I'm hopeful about is actually we have somebody in Washington, D.C. finally saying, wait a minute, let's get healthy, right? Let's stop and let's back up. And, love him or hate him, whoever, it's like the fact that we're starting to ask those questions, I think, is really positive. And for me, it creates hope that we're going to see change in my lifetime, to rather than just continuing to treat chronic disease, step back and look at, okay, what's causing that, and see if we can fix that instead. So, I mean, Chris, when you and I were in school, type 2 diabetes was called adult onset, right? And the average age of the person diagnosed with adult onset diabetes was in their late 20s. You know what the average age of adult onset diabetes today in the United States is? 10. They're 10 years old. We have kids that have,
Really?
so now we call it type 2 diabetes. I mean, it's adolescent onset diabetes, right? And that should be alarming to us. Like, I don't know, but anyway, so I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that we're going to see some changes, and it's going to have to be patient driven too. I think because the system is designed to benefit, pharmaceutical companies and et cetera, I think it needs to be patient driven too. Patients need to come in and go become their own advocate and go,
Absolutely.
no, I don't want to do that. I want to get off this medication. I want to know what it would take for me to get healthy so I don't need this. And, I think it has to come from both sides. But and I think there's a growing awareness. Podcasts like this, I think, make a huge difference in terms of getting information out to the public, and to the profession. And I think there's just a kind of an increasing awareness. And I think COVID played a role in that too, right? The whole us being forced to take the COVID vaccine, that whole pandemic, I think people started to ask questions that we hadn't been asking before. And I think that's playing a role just on the general health knowledge. I think the health IQ of your average person in the US, I think, are more inclined now to say, time out, wait a minute, I want to know more about that, and start asking the important questions. So anyway, that's where we're at.
And thanks to Dr. McKay, I developed a new set of questions that I started asking people when I started learning this science. And
By the way, I love Brian.
oh, so do I.
Always been one of my heroes. I've always looked up to him. So, yeah, that's really cool.
I haven't worked for him for a while, but we still stay in touch, and I consider him one of my best friends
I don't doubt
because
it.
my definition of a friend is someone that will tell you the truth as far as they know it, not what they think you want to hear. And that's what I've appreciated. It was hard at times because I wasn't used to that. But when he hired me, and by the way, I positioned myself with him. He didn't have a choice. I was for him. And when he hired me, he said, "I only have one expectation of you, and that's for you to grow." And I've had the most growth in the last 25 years than I could even begin to imagine happening, hadn't I been in an environment on a daily basis where he was, because he taught me so much. And one of the most important things that he taught me was that we do wants dentistry in his practice. And so I started shifting my questions, and I needed to know the answer to this question because I refused to make an assumption about it, the answer. And you might as well take a 3-inch piece of duct tape and put it across my mouth if I don't know the answer. And the question is, tell me about what you want for yourself. Because we now know that patients want one of two things. They either want to move towards the benefit of health or away from the consequences of disease. And how you treat them clinically is exactly the same, but your messaging and communication with them is totally different, isn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's an entirely different conversation.
Yes.
And the first time I just reflect back like 25 years, and I started talking to patients differently. Like they came in, and I'm at, suddenly I'm at having them fill out a risk assessment form, and I'm trying to figure out why they're getting cavities. And I'll never forget, I had patients ask, doc, if this works and I stop getting cavities, aren't you kind of putting yourself out of business? And I said, yep, that's my goal, and that's my plan. At some point in time, I want to be able to retire and go fishing. And I want you all taken care of so I can leave, with a clear conscience. But it was having an entirely different conversation with patients about about health. We started talking about that instead of like, oh, you have two cavities and you need to have this done.
Yeah.
Instead, it was like, well, what would you like? Right? Here's some options for care. And here are some of your options if you want to be healthy and stop having cavities, or here's some options if you want to get your gums healthy. And at the time, we didn't really appreciate what that meant for the rest of the body, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like we now know there are numerous studies indicating that some of the bacteria that cause cavities play a major role in strokes. Microbleeds in the brain, they are the causative agent for bacterial endocarditis. I've got a friend who just in the hospital right now with bacterial endocarditis, and it's real. And having a healthy mouth, having a healthy biofilm helps, right? So, we started having those kind of conversations, and at first they started looking at me kind of like, huh? And then over a period of time, they all got it. And my hygiene team at first looked at me like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And over a period of time, it was like they were leading, my hygiene team was leading the conversation. Like they were educating the patient, having that, what do you want for yourself? Here's your options. What do you want, right? What's your goal here, and how can we help you accomplish that? Which is a whole different approach to healthcare. And unfortunately, we don't see a whole lot of that in medicine just yet. So anyway, but it's changing, like I say, and I think dentistry is playing a role in driving that change, right? For those of us who are taking that approach to care, I think patients are becoming, better educated and better informed, and starting to look at, well, I kind of want to have that kind of care from my physician. and start asking those kind of questions. And so I think, I think you're just going to see continued growth and change all around. But it's going to be a generational change. Like I first thought this would happen like in 10, oh, I told John Featherstone, 10 years, everybody will be doing this. And that was like in 2000, right? That was 15 years ago. We passed that milepost and we're not anywhere near there. And John actually, when he retired, he and I had breakfast and he said to me, Kim, that wasn't our job. Our job was to advance the ball. And we advanced the ball. And
Yes,
so
you did.
I started looking at it like, yeah, we did. We moved it down the field a long way. And so maybe we don't carry it across the goal line, but we've got the ball going the right direction. And so, which was our role here. So we'll be the catalyst. The catalyst gets drives the chemical reaction, and it's disappeared and done. Everybody forgets about it at the end, but we're the catalyst in the meantime.
Yes, absolutely you are. It's about that. There was a drawing I saw of somebody trying to push a rock up the hill, and they said, well, it wasn't necessarily that we expected you to move it uphill. We just wanted you to push it and see
Right.
what you could accomplish. But I think what you've been doing is so important and had a huge impact on my life and my patients and helping them become advocates for their own care. What do you think is necessary for people, or how would they go about it, that want to make this kind of change in how they take care of their patients, but they don't know how to do it? They don't know how to make that change.
And that's a challenge, right? And it's a challenge within a, you got to have everybody in the practice on the same page. Like you can't have one person that has this belief and approach on a team of 8 or 10 or 14 people, right? It's like everybody has to understand it and embrace it. And so, I mean, I think I made all the mistakes one could possibly make on trying to incorporate this into my practice. But I actually read a book. It was titled Tribal Leadership, and it was a it, the concept was about as humans, we are most effective in groups of three. And if you want to make change in an organization, find the two movers and shakers with you. And if you can get them to understand what you're trying to accomplish and get them on your team, they'll change the organization. The three of you have the power to change the organization. And so I took my two key hygienists out to lunch and I said, listen, this is what I'm trying to do. This is why I'm trying to do it. And they got it. And within my practice, it finally, but it took me 3 or 4 years of beating my head against the wall trying to make that happen. I think at this point in time, for a practitioner, a dental professional that wants to kind of pursue this level of care, I tell you what, at CareFree, my customer representatives have trained probably 10,000 dental practices at this point in time. They know more about this than anybody on the planet when it comes to training. And those things are free. Like we do that for free. To help practices understand, we give them the tools, the risk assessment forms, et cetera, to help them, put those wheels in motion. I think organizations like AOSH, American Academy of Oral Systemic Health, is a great place to go and learn more about this. For dent and hygienists, I was going to say for dentists and hygienists, Doug Thompson certainly is an advocate for how he approaches periodontal disease. From a medical management standpoint, and he teaches at the COIS Center, and I would say if either a dentist or a hygienist, if you wanted to go learn more about just risk assessment based care and taking that approach with patients, go enroll in the COIS Center. I mean, John COIS is a visionary in our time. And so I'd say I would make those kind of recommendations.
You're listening to Health Lifelines, a podcast brought to you by The Lifeguard Approach, your trusted source for insights, solutions, and training that empower you to become a lifeguard for your patients' health and well-being. This episode is just a taste of the strategies and stories we will share to help you and your patients live longer, healthier lives. If you're enjoying the content, make sure to hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. As a reminder, this podcast and the opinions expressed here are not a medical diagnosis. And don't forget to explore our additional resources, tools, exclusive content, courses, and coaching solutions from The Lifeguard Approach by visiting our website at thelifeguardapproach.com. And now let's jump back into today's episode.
And the information's out there. I mean, you know, you can catch up with a lot of these people who are teaching this at meetings. You know, I teach, you know, at some of the major meetings. I teach local study clubs, and I know a lot of people do. So, and maybe, you know, that's what I always tell young people. And this was something that, and I know you can relate to this, Chris, but find a mentor, right? I have a very good friend. He's an unbelievable artist. And he has a saying, success leaves clues. And I love that statement, that concept. It's like, go find somebody that's doing it and study them, right? Figure out, because they figured it out. And if they could figure it out, they can help you figure it out rather than you trying to sort it out on your own. And so find a mentor, you know? So if you want to learn how to do this, you're a young hygienist or a young dentist, go find a practitioner that's already doing this and say, you know, I really want to do this. Can you help me? And I can't imagine anybody saying no to that, right? Like, I just can't imagine. So, because as human beings, we love helping people, and particularly in the health professions, in dentistry, we all got into dentistry because we love helping people, right? And so I think, you know, we love to help our colleagues as well. Anyway, so that's my advice.
That's compassion in action, compassion for others.
Yep.
You know, the Dalai Lama had a quote that says, I'm just paraphrasing it very loosely, but whether you're young or old, rich or poor, there are times in your life when you need help from others.
Mm-hmm.
And I think medicine and dentistry is a huge example of that. And, the Dalai Lama just said, that's our role, is to be helpers and be kind and help, figure out ways to help people that need some kind of help. And there's a benefactor from North Dakota that read that and thinks that there needs to be more compassion in medicine, and now they have started to include some of us in dentistry, that he gave $100 million to UC San Diego to create an institute. It couldn't be about Alzheimer's or cancer or AIDS or anything other. It only could be dedicated to the study of compassion.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I've had the benefit of taking some classes from them in January. I took a 3-day course in Lead with Compassion. And I think that is, when you look at the bigger picture of all of this, that I think that we have to as a society, we have to bring back more compassion in our lives and be willing to help others that need help, based upon what the Dalai Lama says, you know. But I just see, I think hygienists are the chosen people in dentistry because we, of all of anybody that provides care, we get to spend more time on a yearly basis than anyone else in the dental field.
In healthcare,
In healthcare, period.
typically, period. Yeah.
So to me, it makes a big difference when a doctor will take the attitude that Brian did towards their team members and challenge them to create a bigger canvas of who they can be for their patients. And that's what he did for me, and that's what opened up a whole new world of how I decided to take care of patients. And it's people like you and others that are developing these systems. And I don't get involved with all these products coming down the line. I want a system that works.
Right.
So I just have a huge thank you to you for
Oh, well,
developing
thank
that.
you.
And it had such a huge role in how I help patients create a healthy biofilm. You had a big influence and impact in that.
Well, thank you, Chris. You asked about my superpower when we started this, and I said it is a blessing and a curse. And there are days I feel frustrated, right? And it's like, why am I, it's like, why am I doing this? I feel like some days I feel like I'm beating my head against the wall. And then I will get a patient will actually email me from across the country, somebody else's patient that was using our products and, was at a dentist that we had trained in that practice and thanking me.
Yeah.
And, it's like, oh, yep, I needed to hear that. That's why I do this. This is why I get out of bed in the morning. And just once in a while hearing, that you made a difference, I think helps a lot. So thank you for sharing that with me, Chris. You're making
Yeah.
a huge difference. I mean, I see the huge difference that you're making. And I really appreciate that.
Well, mine. The reason why, I've been retired clinically for a while, but I still share my beliefs because I know where my gifts come from. And I have an obligation to not leave this earth without sharing those gifts and sharing them as much as I can. And so I don't want to leave this earth with even one arrow left in my quiver of gifts that
You
have.
gave me that book,
Yeah.
and I'll never forget that I read that book. I loved it. It was like, use all your arrows,
Yeah.
Don't leave anything, don't leave anything on the table. Give it everything, 'cause that's why we're here, right?
Yeah.
So I love that. I love that whole thought, and thank you actually for recommending that book to me.
Oh, you're welcome. So let's see. I think it would be just great if you could say a few words about the difference between coaching a patient and educating them.
That's a very good question, right? And you have to be very careful. I spent 2 years in a coaching program, and I think the one of the challenges that I saw first starting in this risk assessment based care like 25 years ago was I realized I needed to learn how to talk to the patients differently. Like, I needed to have a different conversation. And I felt like I didn't have the verbal skills to do that right. Because we were trained how to do that in dental school. We were trained how to drill and fill. We weren't trained how to ask the right questions and do motivational interviewing or coaching or co-coaching or, we were We were taught to show them how to brush and floss. For all the world that that does, right? I mean, it's like, and so I think the difference between educating the patient is showing them how to floss. And that doesn't get any, that doesn't motivate anybody to floss. If it did, everybody floss, right? Because we, you, hygienists, you guys are really good at that. You've been, you got the big models and the teeth, and you've been showing patients that forever. And very few people floss or floss regularly, right? So just showing somebody something doesn't change behavior. It's being able to help them identify what they want, see the benefit in that in their own life and health, and then being able to like help them as they need help. I mean, I see coaching in terms of in classic coaching, the work is all on the patient. You know, you want to whatever, make this change in your life. I am here to support you, but listen, I'm not going to stand in your bathroom every morning at 7 a.m. and go, remember to floss. You know, if you want to make that change, I'm going to cheer you on, and I might give you some ideas or tools to help you create that new habit, but I'm not going to do it for you. You have to do that, right? So when it comes to peer coaching, in fact, it's best if the patient comes up with the solution themselves. Like, I'll ask, well, how are you going to do that? How are you going to remember to do that so you get that change? You know, we had this classic belief that you could develop a new habit in 21 days. And that is such a fallacy. We now know that it takes about 9 months. And at 9 months, with daily reminding for us to create a sustainable new habit, 9 months, this isn't a 21-day kind of thing. And so being able to help the patient if they don't have a so can't come up with a solution, well, here's an idea. Here's what's worked for other patients of mine. Here's two or three ideas that, you know, and here's something that worked for me. You might think about that. You know, at times I'll help the patient lead them a little bit in terms of giving them some ideas if they can't come up with any on their own. But if you can let them come up with the idea and the solution on their own, and you can just help reinforce that. That's where you're going to be most successful. I want to add one more thing, Chris, because I think when I was first doing this, I was doing ending up, I mean, patients that have a lot of cavities started coming to me, like word of mouth. And it's like, oh, this guy is like going to help you and can help you stop getting cavities. And I mean, you know, and so I saw these people that were quite desperate, but they had tremendous need for restorative dentistry. Like they had mouths full of cavities. And so suddenly I'm trying to treat this from a medical standpoint, and I find myself doing all these major restorative cases on these patients because at the end of the day, I could get them to stop having new cavities, but I still had to restore the damage that was there. And I'll never forget one day during my coaching program, I had this, like, I would sequentialize the treatment. So first we're going to do this, then we're going to do that, and then we're going to do this. So I'd lay out their restorative care like in four or five logical steps. It was my idea, right? And one day I realized, you know, if you want somebody to be successful, like I would have a patient, let's say that they needed to start brushing and flossing better, and they also needed to give up Mountain Dew. Right, because they were drinking six a day, right? And so we'd identify those two risk factors, we'd talk about it, and then I would say, okay, here's what, you know, here's where you should start. And I finally got to the point where I realized, what would you like to do first? Right? We're only going to try it. We're only do one thing at a time, because that, you know, it's hard enough to make behavioral change. You can only do one at a time. Which one would you pick? And found that instead of me telling them what to do, letting them decide is a lot more successful for them. And then if I could get them to come up with a solution, and I'd press them, like, I want to have a specific solution. Like, take the example of the two patients that both say, I want to lose 15 pounds. And the one says, yeah, I'm gonna lose it. I'm gonna work on that. And the other one says, well, I'm gonna start it. I'm gonna right from here, I'm going to the gym. I'm gonna get a gym membership. I'm gonna be there like 4 mornings a week before work. I'm going to start measuring portions of food. I'm going to look at hidden sugars in my, you know, somebody that has a specific plan. Of those two people, who's most likely to lose 15 pounds. Somebody that has come up with a very specific plan for themselves. And so if I could just help patients create that plan and let them pick where they wanted to start, it became a lot more successful. So it's a long-winded answer to your very short question, and I apologize, but I
Sure.
think, the difference between educating a patient and coaching is educating them is just demonstrating something, and coaching is actually helping them understand why they want to do it and help motivate them to actually accomplish it and giving them the skills they need to make it happen.
Yeah, that's good. You know, Malcolm Gladwell in The Tipping Point talks about you gotta have three components to that. You gotta make it personal, practical, and your message has got to be sticky so it doesn't go in one ear and out the other. So, yeah, all good things. Yeah, look at the growth you've had.
Oh my goodness. I was just on a guest on a podcast 2 days ago, and they started talking about all the things that I'd done in my career, right? And they asked, do you ever look back and go, wow, like, how did you get there? And because I had actually asked the host, like, wow, how did you get to there in your life, right? And they were like, well, and I started thinking about, and then they asked me, and I started thinking about it, and it's like, when I graduated from dental school, I just wanted to be a dentist. I want to be a very good dentist. I wanted to have a great practice. I wanted to help all my patients. And then I got, my curiosity, that's a curse too. My curiosity took me to the point of like, well, how can I do this better? I continued to always look for innovations. Like I felt like it was part of my responsibility as stewardship in the profession of to leave it better than when I was inherited it, right? From the people ahead of us. And so I was always looking for a better way, always doing that. And if you're curious, I kind of went through one door, and that was a whole new hallway with a bunch of doors. And I went through a different door, and my curiosity led me down another hallway. And pretty soon you end up like, being a clinical dentist was such a small part of my life and career, right? I mean, I love clinical practice. But and I look back on my career, and it actually was a very just a small percentage of what I actually ended up doing with my life in my education in terms of creating, or building businesses, creating products, changing philosophies, writing books, having my own podcast. If you'd have told me 5 years ago I'd have a podcast, I'd have laughed at you. And I'm sure you can kind of identify with that, Chris. But then I sit here and go, people ask, well, how'd you do that? And it's like, it was just a series of decisions, but it was somewhat serendipitous, led by my curiosity, because like I say, that wasn't my plan. Like I look back, I absolutely wouldn't change anything in my life. I've loved every opportunity I've had. And oh, another person, a great dentist friend, has a saying that persistence creates opportunity. Like, just keep doing it and opportunity will come. And having that, I think, that optimism, I've been able to do so many things, research, inventions. I don't know. It's been so much fun, and I'm still having fun. I retired from clinical practice like you did. I retired in 2019. I miss my team, my patients, and what have you, but it's given me the time and flexibility and freedom to actually do more in terms of, I think, helping a greater number of people. So, I'm living my best life,
Well, I love that you have used the word curiosity many times today because I see the difference. I learned the difference. We lose our curiosity as we start to grow up. Children ask anywhere from more than 300 questions a day. How come? Why is that? Are you sure? Mommy, why is this happening? And as we get older, we come to think we know the answers to all the questions, so we stop asking questions and we lose the curiosity. And so I love that you have stayed curious, and your curiosity has driven a lot of your success in helping people. So that's a great legacy. What specifically do you want your legacy to be?
Oh, I haven't even thought about that, Chris. I want to be a great example for my children and grandchildren, that I want them to have a belief that they can accomplish anything in the world that they can dream of,
Yeah.
right? I guess that if I could leave some example for them that anything is possible, if you just believe, and if you're willing to put the work in, if you're willing to be persistent, opportunities will come. And I think for me, that's the most important legacy, being a great husband and father and grandfather. And then I think, from a professional standpoint, just that I was a positive influence, and I help people. I had a physician, he was elderly at the time, and I said, looking back at your life, how would you define, success? And he was in his 90s at the time, and he said, "Kim, I want to believe that I help more people than I hurt." And I thought, what a beautiful statement. Because I think we unintentionally hurt people in our life as we go through our journey. And just knowing that, or hoping that you're helping more people, I think that's kind of the legacy I'd like to have.
Yeah. And it's a big one, and it's right on point, sir.
No, thanks, Chris.
You're welcome. Any last words you have for our listeners today?
I guess, Chris, I really appreciate you. I think there, I really appreciate your invitation here to be on your podcast. I've enjoyed this conversation. I love talking to you and talking about all these ideas and topics. I think is the same thing I would tell them is become your own advocate when it comes to your health care. Become your own advocate, educate yourself, ask questions. Don't just accept the, here, take this pill, but why am I taking this pill, and what could I do maybe in my lifestyle that might alter that so I didn't need it? How can I get healthy? Ask those kind of questions, and at the same point in time, have faith and hope and the confidence that whatever it is you want to accomplish in your life, it's possible, right? I mean, it's possible. So, I think that's the message I'd like to leave.
Absolutely. And it's a great one. And thank you so much for being on the Health Lifelines podcast with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. And I can't wait to see you again sometime.
All right. That sounds good. That's it for today's episode of Health Lifelines, brought to you by the Lifeguard Approach. I hope you found inspiration and actionable insights to support you and your patients' journeys towards better health and more fulfilling lives. Remember, every small step you take today builds the foundation for a healthier tomorrow. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate, review, and share the podcast with someone who could benefit from it. Your support helps us reach more listeners and grow this community of health-conscious individuals and dental professionals focused on becoming lifeguards for their patients. For more tips, tools, and resources from the Lifeguard Approach, visit us online at thelifeguardapproach.com. Also, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn at the Lifeguard Approach. Thank you for tuning in. Until next time, stay informed, stay inspired, and keep showing up as a lifeguard for your patients at every single appointment.